Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Here we go again. Another exciting adventure into Action Radio, the world's only show where we have a citizen legislature attached to the show so that we can not only talk about the problems, we can actually write and submit active citizen legislation to the various legislatures of government, Congress, the state legislatures, and the local governments out there, the city councils, the county commissions, things like that. We're the only place that this can happen I know it's the only place it can happen. That's not quite correct. We're the only place it does happen. And so far, we're it. And as this catches on and this idea catches on, you know, I fully expect a bunch more folks to come on board and try it out. Now, they can come on board with us. You know, I'm more than happy to have talk show hosts around the country come join us. And I'll happily teach them how to do what we do as far as, lobbying and working with their audience and picking selective bills regionally or things that they're interested in and sort of divide up all the bills we have. Because I've got, you know, some 80 on our website, writeyourlaws.com. And I've got another 150 sitting in a computer file that have yet to be touched. So we've got a lot of work to do. We have just tons of things going on. Anyway, I've got David Jones on the line. David Jones is one of the founders of Santa Rosa Volunteers, the folks who have commissioned me to do this amazing project. And David's on the line now. Here we go. His line is live. And David, I have to tell you, I think I'm learning more than anybody else about this. This is because I never, you know, I'm ADHD about as much as it gets. And I don't have the patience for a lot of things. So the thought of doing, you know, going through the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers, which I'd never heard of, well, I heard of, but I hadn't really read, was kind of like a daunting thing. But as I get more and more into it, this is fascinating. And the parallels between what they were talking about then and what we're dealing with now, saying, well, you better watch out. You better watch out for that national government or you're going to get this. And apparently this is exactly what's happened. And so it is a fascinating revelation. They knew. They knew where this could lead. And now we have to find a way to get back to that original knowledge and original idea and model for our government so that we actually get the freedom that we deserve as Americans. Good morning, sir. How are you today?
Good morning. I'm wonderful. How about yourself?
I'll tell you, I'm still on an adrenaline rush from yesterday. We had Dr. Judy Mikovits on. Apparently, I've been pronouncing her name wrong all this time. But just let me just go over a couple of things. Let me know if you had a chance to hear it. If not, you definitely have to check out this show and share it because the knowledge that I got, the groundbreaking things that we had yesterday, you know, we made news. We made a ton of news yesterday, and hopefully some other folks will pick it up, some of the larger media, you know, for now, areas out there. But the idea that there really is no SARS-CoV-2, it's all a myth. These are viruses that are created in labs, and they've been distributed for a couple of years now through the flu shots. That's what she was talking about. And once, of course, someone gets injected with a virus, or the disease itself, you know, then of course they can spread it the old fashioned way, you know, through the air, that kind of stuff once they have symptoms. But, and I still have to confirm exactly whether that's the mechanism or not, but the idea that it's the vaccines, the flu shots, and now the COVID shots that are actually spreading this, and that the cure, the real vaccine, the prevention that Dr. Zelenko and Dr. Mikovits have been talking about, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, vitamin D, vitamin C, the same things that stop you from getting, you know, COVID in the first place, are the same things that can help people who have a vaccine treat themselves so they can get over as much as possible the effects of the, quote, vaccine, which really isn't a vaccine. That was mind-blowing. That was just it's an incredible thing. And we're going to be working. I'm actually in touch with both of them, both Dr. Zelenko and Dr. Mikovits right now, and we're going to try and come up with protocols so that people can find a way, you know, not only those that want to prevent it, because Dr. Zelenko already has those, but the protocols for people that want to recover from the vaccine. Nobody's talking about this, you know, anywhere on the planet that I know of. This is groundbreaking stuff, and I just, you know, it happened right here yesterday. So if you get a chance, like I say, share it far and wide and tell folks that those have had a vaccine. There are treatments for, I don't know if there's cures, I don't think so, but there are definitely treatments for the vaccine, and they're the same things that will stop you getting COVID in the first place or cure it if you already have it. Wow. What do you think?
That is definitely amazing stuff. I haven't had a chance to listen to the show yesterday, but yeah. You know, what they're saying about distributing this virus through vaccines is not a far-fetched idea when you listen to people like Bill Gates and the founders and the fundraising behind these vaccines say those very things in different talks that they've done and things that they've published. So it's not a far-fetched idea when they've already told you that was their intent in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting with Bill Gates is there's two schools of thought on what he said. Either he said, and I haven't verified this, so I have to look more into it myself. Either he said he wants to cut the population in half through vaccines, which seems a little crazy to me considering the guy makes money off vaccines. And, why would the big corporations want to lose half their customers? It doesn't make sense to me. But what he also said, or what people say he said, is that he wants to make the world healthier for people so they don't have to have as many kids by giving vaccines so that, children in various countries, they don't have the same health care. You know, they won't have to have six kids so that two will survive. You know, they can just have two so that two will survive. And I'm not sure. I don't know what his motivation is, but he definitely wanted to, he worked with China and the WHO and Dr. Fascist and all these folks, to bring about a vaccine that made them all billionaire. They made the billionaires, even bigger billionaires. There's so much money. And this is the real scandal too. Right. There is so much money being made right now. And it's a guaranteed market. The government says you have to get this or else. And then we don't know what our else is yet, but or else keeps getting more severe. So what better place to be if you're social media invested in big pharma, invested in big pharma, NIH, CDC, FDA, who can make money off the patents that they create with your money and my money, and they can get royalties for the manufacture. They can get patents on licensing the distribution. This is the biggest, it's like a medical mafia. I should write that down, medical mafia. I like that term. What do you think?
Well, and if you look at in regards to Bill Gates and cutting the population in half, I'm sure you're familiar with Project Mockingbird, which goes into one of the old school conspiracy theories, as everybody likes to call it. But when you look at movies, modern movies like The Avengers, and I'm not super familiar with their series, but they had an evil villain in the movie that's trying to cut the world's population in half to save the planet and everybody will be more prosperous, blah, blah, blah. I mean, that's pretty much what they're doing. They truly believe that we are killing the planet. So the only way to save the planet, save humanity, in their train of thought, is to reduce the population.
No, yeah, and actually I'm not familiar with Project Mockingbird, so feel free to elaborate on that. But yeah, the movies, now here's the thing I found about fascinating about the movies. We used to have our movie reviewer, Tina Terry, call in from Arizona, but it's a bit early there in the morning for her, so we only got her for a few months. But the movies fascinate me. I'm going to give you a first point to react to, that Hollywood, they produce these things like The Hunger Games and Divergence, and I guess it was an American film, but it starred an English actor, V for Vendetta, and there are films all throughout, for decades now, about the underdog fighting the oppressive government. And yet, who does Hollywood actually support, if not the oppressive government over the underdog, the American citizen? That little contradiction seems to have escaped a lot of people's notice.
Absolutely, and that's kind of where Mockingbird started. So if you look at all Disney movies, the main character has suffered some kind of a parental loss. Bambi, her father shot. Snow White, he doesn't have any parents. So there's always this kind of mental catastrophic loss, and when you couple that with people's already difficult lives and somebody who's suffered actual trauma in real life, it rewires the brain. It's very in depth and hard to get into, but Project Mockingbird is fascinating.
Where did it start? I mean, this is the first I've heard of it. So where does it come from? Is it a psychological thing or various activist groups?
Psychological. It started right after World War II, if I remember correctly. It's a psychological operation that started back in the 40s.
What were they trying to do?
Program people, program the masses, get them to go along pretty much end game of where we're at right now.
You know, I sort of wonder about these things because everybody has theories, and you know, they're always trying to contribute to you know, the everything comes down to, I guess, the, you know, the individual versus the control, you know, and so the government wants control and the individuals want freedom. So let me put it that way. So there always seems to be these programs. I'm not sure how effective this is. Like I said, I've never heard of it, but you know, you wonder how much is actually planned or how much is, you know, just kind of by accident. So, you know, I was thinking as you were talking about Bonanza, you know, Bonanza is about four guys, you know, three sons, and all the moms died in childbirth. what are the chances? That doesn't even seem probable. So, you know, we've always heard stories about orphans and things like that, but that happened. It still happens. You know, so it's a, I don't know. I'm not sure why they would take the loss of a parent as doing something. I always thought of Bambi once I got a little older and got over the trauma of seeing it at 5 years old when it came out it was anti-hunting. It was like, you know, hunters bad, you know, animals good,
right.
You know, and it seems to be
on
much
the, on the surface. That's what you get into. There's a documentary called Out of Shadows that really kind of delves into that, and it shows you the documentations. It's probably been a year since I've seen it, so some of it's escaping my memory. But pull that up and watch that. It's definitely interesting stuff.
What's that from? Out of Shadows.
Is
it a movie?
It was Out of Shadows is a gentleman that was an actor in Hollywood. It was actually a stunt double, I believe, is what it was. And it's kind of his journey growing in Hollywood and, you know, not believing some of the negative things that was stereotyped about Hollywood. And then when he actually started to open his eyes and see what was going on around him, and he talks firsthand about things that he encountered, it's definitely a good series.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I love political thriller series. There was a British show with, I think, Ian McCugan, if I might have his name wrong, The Prisoner. I don't know if you ever saw The Prisoner with this big, you know, white ball object that would, you know, capture people and suffocate them and all kinds of things. And he says, you know, and they give you a number and they take away everything about you. They take away your name. They take away your identity. You know, it's much like cancel culture today. He also played the warden in Escape from Alcatraz with Clint Eastwood, but he's a British actor, fabulous actor, back in the 60s, sort of like a contemporary of Roger Moore when he played, you know, Simon Templar in The Saint. So very interesting stuff. Oh, this is interesting. I've got all kinds of messages on my right side. I don't want them now. the new feature. Well, no, this is the fun. Well, actually, we have Jean, who does our life coach report Tuesday, starting as our producer, probably next week sometime. And so, you know, I'm going to have help, you know, because we're getting bigger and busier, especially after yesterday's show. Oh, you know, I can't believe, you know, the just huge jump in listeners and you know, and we've got some folks that we're going to be working with, especially on these vaccine mandates, various professions, you know, including especially medical. And so it's going to be, you know, Ascension Sacred Heart has a new thing where they're trying to mandate vaccines. They're not the only ones. There are jobs out there. There are all kinds of places. So we're going to be big into that. And also providing, like I say, possibly, you know, treatments and cures for the vaccine. And no one's talking about that. Anyway, I want to get back to our theme. We can talk about it. But I had a question. As you were talking, I was thinking again. Hollywood produces these amazing films about the underdog. So if they're trying to give a message of, you know, knuckle under, do what you're told, take the vaccine, wear the mask, what's your damn problem? You know, they're really not doing it in their movies with like the Hunger Games, Divergence, you know, it's like all the weird people, all the individuals are the ones that they're highlighting. And they also go after political corruption, at least they used to, with a movie, do you remember the film All the President's Men? This is Dustin Hoffman and Robert Redford. Years ago, it was back in the Watergate days. So they actually, that was a pretty decent film, you know, covering the two reporters, Carl Bernstein and Bob Woodward. And so, there have been several films since then, The Candidate. There are other political films. There's one with, I forgot his name, John Cusack, and someone else where they run for Congress, and they're totally corrupt. It's amazing. But so Hollywood, it's like they do the things that are, I don't know if they're doing just for popularity, but why would they make these films about the courage of the underdogs? You know, is it just to sell them? Because that would encourage people to be, you know, to have courage when they are underdogs. It certainly inspires me. What do you think?
They definitely have the hero complex aspect in there, but if you look at the overall theme of the movie, it's still, you know, big government and control of everything. And throughout the majority of the movie, these individuals are painted as as evil or corrupt or a problem like Divergent. It's, you know, these people are killing our society. It's mm-hmm. not until later on in the movie that you realize that they're not the problem, they're solution. But
yeah.
And I there's a lot of truth to that as well in society, but I don't understand all of what they do for sure.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Interesting. Okay, well, what's going on at Santa Rosa Volunteers? What you might want to introduce people to that again, because we have a bunch of new listeners. So what's happening?
So the biggest thing we've got this week is the school board. So we've mm-hmm. got the Republican event tomorrow that you'll be at. I believe you're emceeing that thing, correct?
That's what I hear. That should be interesting. Because I didn't even been to a meeting. Here I am running a meeting I've never been to. So this is going to be a lot of fun. But, you know, I'm used to improvising. So we shall definitely have some fun. So we might do, you know, at some point, it'd be interesting to get some of the folks from the county Republicans on the show here. And we can talk about some of the issues. But, yeah, I guess that's me. So let's have some fun. Yep. So it's going to be at the Hangar tomorrow night. The meeting starts at 6. And is it open to the public or is it just for the committee? I got to find out even more about it.
I believe it's just for the committee.
Okay.
We, the school board members, the individuals running for school board, will be there. The superintendent of schools, Dr. Barber, will be there.
Oh, this should be interesting.
She's speaking as well. And I've been involved with them all week. Our main focus has been with the budget, the school board budget.
Right.
We got big problems there here locally. It's a $429 million budget this year, which is a $26 million increase over last year. There's a lot of holes and problems that I see in the budget, the wasteful spending, things of that nature. We spent well over $100 million on computers and electronics last year, and there's another $100 million on computers this year. It's
Wait a minute here. $100 million, the schools are spending $100 million, and who are these computers and electronics going to?
That's the questions that I'm still asking.
Parents buy their kids computers, you know, and even if they're you know, lower income, they're still, you know, computers that are simpler, you know, that don't have all the latest, you know, gazillion functions. You know, you can get a Dell or I guess or some of the other computers, you know, to get through school. Like we bought cheap calculators, you know, when I was in school, because we couldn't afford the $200 models with all the amazing functions, but we didn't need them. So where's the money going? I'm kind of curious now.
Yeah, that's what I've been digging into. Those are the questions that I'm asking. I don't have those answers at this point. That's kind of what's bothering me.
No, I understand. Hey, listen, it's more important to ask the questions first. I never expect or require answers on this show. The fact that you're looking is enough of that's really important. And people should understand that too, that we don't have all the answers. This show is not about what has happened. We're not reporters here. Okay, this is an advocacy show, so we talk about what can happen, what should happen, what we try to make happen, you know, and we don't know the answers because we're going into the future here. So as we look ahead into these things, a lot of times we'll be talking about questions that we're just starting to ask about, you know, like we're talking about here today. So my question now, and I got Pianki in the line. Pianki, hold on, I'll get you in just a second. With these budget questions, are there public hearings on the budget? Is there a citizens' watchdog committee? What's going on with the budget? What can you do?
There are public hearings on the budget. One okay. was the 29th of last month. That's where I was first introduced to all this information. Mm-hmm. So there's still one more public hearing before they can officially pass the budget. So
okay.
That's why we're kind of spending all of our time and energy on this, because we've only got a short time frame to work with. And I'll get some answers. So the superintendent has said that they're fine with me sitting down with their financial team and going over it. So I'm definitely going to get that scheduled. So I appreciate the transparency there. But when you start asking these questions, they kind of parrot we have an A+ rating with whatever agency that says we're fiscally responsible. And they all kind of live in this government spending world, and the status quo is okay with them. And, you know, $429 million budget is just mind-blowing to me. when
what's that translate for a student? Just curious, what if you break it down per student, how many students, you know, you take the $429 million, break it down by student, how much are they actually spending per student? That's going to be very interesting, because the state spends as well, and the federal government spends as well. You know, education
right.
spending is one of the biggest boondocks. And the next thing I want to leave before I get Pianchi on, we're not going to go. I got a question for you. Do you have the help of any forensic accountants, and would you like to maybe recruit some? And is there an accounting firm that we should be talking to help you out looking at this budget, you know, from people that have expertise in looking at budgets?
I do not have any help, and yes, I would love to have an accounting team that would help with this.
Okay, well, let's put the word. Any forensic accountants, get in touch with me. Either call in right now, or let's start looking. You and I need to talk after the show. Okay, so what we need to do is start calling. So calling forensic accountants, you know, for a school budget. Let me get Bianca in line and see what's going on. I'll finish writing up my notes here. All right, so let's make this line live. Takes a second. There we go. Bianca, you're on with David Jones, founding member of Santa Rosa Volunteers, and me. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, David. I got a whole team of auditors. It's called the State of Florida Auditor, the auditor for the state of Florida. You can petition them, and they will come in and audit your school district. As simple as that.
Just asking you to receive. This is how great this show is, David. You know, you have a problem, you have a question, somebody knows. Somebody knows the answer. David, have you ever looked into that? I've never heard of this. This sounds great. Is there same, and I'm wondering if the same thing is in Missouri where Bianchi is. David?
Yeah,
go ahead.
You contact your Secretary of State.
Okay.
Ask them how many signatures do you have to have on a petition to petition the state auditor to come in. And not only can they audit your school district, they can audit City Hall, they can audit the police department, the fire department, wherever you want to be audited. And they will result their findings to the convened public meeting and let you know what's going on. You take that information, if there's any impropriety, some wrongdoing, to fire people, to recall school boards and get rid of superintendents, and a whole lot of good things come out of that.
David, are you taking notes? Do you have a question for Bianchi?
Yeah, so we've actually done that before,
okay.
And that's kind of what I meant as far as the state auditor. So our school board has an A-plus rating with those auditors. I think it was 2 years ago we were audited. So I don't necessarily imply that the school board is doing things that illegal or immoral, but more so just the general way governments spend money. There's no need to spend that much money. So this year, because tax assessments increased and they got a $26 million increase in their budget, they just filled that budget instead of not needing that money and lowering their assessment to where the people aren't charged as much. They just take every bit of money they can, they find somewhere to spend it. That's what we're trying to change.
Yeah, I want to make it clear, we're not talking about criminal activity here, but an audit's not for that purpose. Well, it can be. I mean, you can audit to find criminal activity. But at this point, you know, a government audit of the school board, because we're talking about the budget, would be for inefficiency, would be for duplication, would be for waste, would be for things they just don't need. And I think the problem that we've all talked about is the fact that governments, departments, agencies, offices, all the way through the line, have this ridiculous notion that they have to spend every dollar that they get every year, spend so that they can get, you know, as much or more next year, because budgets always have to grow. That's what we really have to stop. It's this automatic growth of spending requirement these people seem to have. We need to reward them for cutting money, for being more efficient, for getting rid of the waste, for stopping the duplication. And, you know, if parents are buying kids computers, why would the taxpayers have to buy them again? That kind of thing. David?
Well, the audit will reveal.
All right, Pianchi.
The audit will reveal any criminal activity also. That goes along with the audit. I want to ask another question. How is the school district on critical race theory? Is it listening to parents, because it's parents' children that they're working with, or are they taking the notion that I know better than you?
They are absolutely taking the notion that they know better than everybody. Myself and about six other people were removed from their meeting via law enforcement for talking about critical race theory and showing it to them in their own curriculum that they voted in this year. It's quite amazing.
Wow.
Well, see, that's where things went wrong. Parents of a school district should not let the school district take that position. Because you are the boss when it comes down to that school district. I'm sure probably that your state statutes say so. And when parents let a school district members run amok, the board, superintendent, and so on, so on, so on, then you get what you get. You have to take that back away from them. They are your children. You can threaten to hold your children out of the school.
David?
No, absolutely. You're 100% correct. We just got to get enough parents engaged and involved to make that change. When there's 15 or 20 people up there once a month, they don't put a whole lot of stock into what we have to say.
Yeah. Well, the real key is replacing the school board, and this is something that's going on all around the country. We've talked about this. Claire Lopez talks about this a lot, you know, on our Thursday, you know, panel discussions in the second hour. But the most important thing to do is, you know, you can fight people that disagree with you all you want. They're still going to, if they're on the board and they disagree with you, then they're going to do what they want, you know, until the next election. And so you're kind of stuck. So I think the number one thing is to have people that would, you know, are positive, that are going to make positive changes because they want to make positive changes rather than trying to fight people, fight that inertia of people that want critical race theory, that want to spend all the money in the budget. So the key is, I'm not sure when the next election is, but I know Shannon Rice is running from the city council. And so we should get her, you know, I don't know if you're working with her on this, you know, the budget issue, but it's a great thing, you know, to get going. It's a good thing for her to run on. And do we have other candidates like Shannon, you know, conservative, concerned, you know, American folks that are concerned with our education and our history and making sure that the kids are being taught correctly, not indoctrinated with Marxist theories, you know? So do you know of other candidates who are running and what's happening with the next election? That's where I think the real key is. David?
That's actually going to get started tomorrow. So obviously okay. Shannon's running. We've got she's got our full support. I have brought this information to her. So I'll talk to her later on in
right.
more detail with that. There are, I believe, five other candidates. One we know is running against Shannon Rice. She's the incumbent. We're not supporting her in any way.
Okay.
But
who's
the
that?
Other four
are declared?
Talk to,
if they're declared,
that
you can tell me
is Lisa Sanborn.
Okay.
Well, you know,
so
another thing, too.
A problem.
Okay. Well, if they're running and you know, their name's on the ballot or they've already declared, then we can talk about it. I don't like to mention folks until they've officially declared, just to let them have that discretion. Pianki, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say also this thing about the recall of school board members. If you don't have that in your state, you should start inquiring with your state legislatures to pass a law that would give districts, parents, and property owners the ability to recall school board members. It doesn't make sense that you have to sit with that person for their term, which sometimes is 4 years. It's recall them if they're not doing the wishes of the people.
Yeah. Do we have a recall, David?
We do not. There's an organization called Recall Florida that we support that's working on that very thing now.
Yeah, I'm always one to try and, you know, do things ourselves if we can. And so if you want to, actually, you and I can probably write that bill fairly easily. And so if Recall Florida wants to carry it for us, that would be great, too. So let's talk off the air and see if we can coordinate that. But I don't think it'd be very tough for us to look into the procedures of the election of the school boards. Look up that in state law. Is it state law? The school boards, or where is it? Who governs?
Yeah, it's state law.
Okay.
So Sabatini has actually, one of our in Tallahassee, has submitted that bill twice now. It's currently sitting in the House in Florida. So. Hopefully it'll
done.
Get the
okay,
votes to pass
right.
right now.
Yep.
And that's why I hadn't mentioned writing the law ourselves.
Okay. Well, no, we don't have – listen, I'm a firm believer. If there's a law that's already been submitted, if there's a good one, if the model legislation's already out there, if another state's already done it, take theirs. You know, reinventing the wheel is a waste of time. You know, if something has been done, you know, let's let it be done. And so let's talk to – in fact, I'm trying to get Anthony Sabatini on the show. And so I'm working on that for a couple of things. One, because he has a law firm, and there's a bunch of people facing vaccine mandates across the state. And we need to stop those. It's illegal. I post the law why it's illegal. These people are doing it anyway. People who should know better. You know, and one of the biggest groups that is resisting these gene transfer treatments, which is what they're technically known as, and I got it from Dr. Peter McCullough, is the fact that they don't trust them. They don't know what's in them. You know, I just learned about a new thing today called graphene oxide, you know, which is actually a metal which can be get an electrical charge that's actually in. It's a chemical that becomes a metal inside the vaccine itself. I don't know a whole lot about it yet. I just heard about it this morning. But all these new things are happening. Like I say, yesterday we learned an incredible amount of stuff that you can treat people, you know, with who have had the vaccine with the same things that stop you getting COVID in the first place, or cure it if you do have COVID, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, you know, things like that. And like I said, it was a mind-blowing show yesterday. So I'm going to get Pianki's reaction to it too. But David, I keep on coming back to that because it was so new and exciting to have news that the people that had been vaccinated could be treated for the vaccine. No one's talking about that.
No, I had never heard that before. That's actually very exciting because from what I had seen, that was the vaccine was the biggest problem and not necessarily COVID.
No, COVID, 99% plus survival rate, yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I know here locally, our COVID rates have risen with the vaccination rate.
Of course they have.
The more people get vaccinated, the more people get COVID, which – people like me and you saw coming, but is a mind-blowing concept for some.
Well, I didn't. You know, what I learned, and Pianki, I'm going to get your reaction to this too in a second, antibody-dependent enhancement, the idea that your immune system naturally cancels out the variants because it moves faster than the virus. So if you get a different form of it comes in, your body recognizes it and goes, I know what that is. That's close enough to what I just killed, you know, last week. Okay. So your body takes care of that. Natural immunity is very flexible. However, vaccine alleged immunity is not. It's very specific. Flu shots are very specific to certain strains of flu, but they don't count all the other ones. So they actually cancel out. As your body replaces natural immunity with chemical immunity, it narrows the focus of what your immunity can do. And with the variants, it's even worse because messenger RNA gene therapy shots are even worse than the regular vaccines in the fact that they're even more specific. So the COVID-19, the original virus that got into this country that Dr. Mikovits said came in through the flu shots and then the COVID, now the COVID shots, you're actually distributing the disease and then it's transferring the old-fashioned way, you know, through the air and contact and things like that. The problem is that, you know, these vaccines are so specific for just a certain strain that the virus looks at that vaccine and goes, oh, I can get around that. So instead of your body getting around the different variants, the viruses are getting around and creating the different variants because they're antibody dependent. They take the antibodies created by your body for a very specific strain, and then they mutate just slightly and throw everything off. And that's why, and I asked Dr. Mikovits about this yesterday, why it seemed unusual to me or coincidental that the rise in COVID cases directly corresponds to the rise in the vaccination rates. Well, that's because the vaccine is distributing, you know, the disease. The vaccine is making the Delta variant worse. So the best thing you can do to stop the Delta variant is stop vaccinating people. That to me was mind-blowing too.
Yeah.
Pianki.
Well, you know, yeah, you're right. See, a vaccine does not have intelligence. The vaccine is programmed and programs to do one thing. Your body has the ability to produce vaccines to match whatever move the virus puts forth. Now, the danger with the vaccines is that they can run amok, just like anything else. Remember the one movie where the computer, War Games, I believe it was, the computer was working against the humans?
Yeah, the Whopper.
Well, that's the chance that you take when you start using these artificially created mechanisms that's supposed to replace the functions of the body that's been around for a zillion of years.
Yeah, yeah. And we're flexible. And this is the thing. There, our personal immunity is amazingly flexible. So if you're healthy, then, you know, that's the first thing. You know, and still the group that nobody's ever talked about except us on this show is the group that never got COVID, never had any symptoms, was naturally immune, not the folks that got it and didn't know it. I'm talking about the people that never got it. So there are millions of people in this country, as everybody I'm sure has been exposed by now, you know, many times over, that never got it. Well, how did they do that? Their immune system was so good, it never affected them. It was killed before it ever had a chance to do anything. And then there's millions more that got it and had no symptoms, or had mild symptoms, or like me, sort of in the mild range, you know, a couple of days off, off work and off my feet, and I was fine, you know. And that was back January 2020, or you know, before we even knew what this was. So, you know, so the millions upon millions upon millions of people that are either immune because they had it or immune because they were immune, never got it in the first place, they're not talked about. And the idea that they're putting these vaccines on everybody, in other words, they're saying that you do not have immunity until you get this, which is such a big lie, because we actually do have immunity. This thing reduces your immunity, creates the variants, makes everything worse, and yet no one's stopping these people. This is the part I don't understand. Who's got some insight? Oh, got you both stumped. It happens. You know,
no,
I mean, there is no answer right now. Go ahead, Dave.
It's kind of, it leaves you speechless because it's so horrible. It's difficult to really wrap your head around, but you're right. I mean, I had COVID about this time last year. Didn't realize it until I was cooking bacon and couldn't smell it burn. And it's like, man, maybe there's a problem.
That's,
I had no sense of smell.
Yeah.
But that was really about the worst thing. I felt kind of crummy for 2 days and I was fine. This is not a global killer like they're trying to make it out to be. And
never was.
The
flu bug.
Pushing these.
Yeah.
Right. The vaccines and stuff, they've never acted this way before. With Ebola and the swine flu and the number of other things that we've faced, why now? Why this vaccine? What's really going on, I guess, is a question that everybody's asking.
And the question I'm asking is, why would you ever need a vaccine when you already have the cure? You know, this is a question I asked back in March 2nd, you know, and from there all the way up to the 15 days to, you know, slow the spread. I said, well, slow the spread? Hell, stop the spread. Kill it right now. We know how to do it. You know, and I was doing these shows way back then, and I'm incredulous. Like, what the hell's wrong with you people? The answer's right here. I got studies from Dr. Zlanko. I got studies from Dr. Raoult. You know, and then I learned about Judy Mikovits, and I got all this information that was coming out. And in fact, I've got the articles. I've got an entire file on early COVID articles where they said that there is no pandemic. It's going to be over soon. We've got the cures. Relax, everybody. No problem. And most of those have been scrubbed from the internet. I've got a bunch of them saved, but that was what they were saying back in March and April before this 15 days to slow this red nonsense. And yet here we are. And now they want to bring back masks, lockdowns, and other crap again. I don't think it's going to work this time. You know, I don't think people are going to be as susceptible or as gullible, or they certainly don't want their business locked down, especially with government being open fully. This is going to be hopefully different as they try to do it again, except in the Marxist states like California, you know, Michigan and New York and places like that. They're probably going to fall for it again, especially California. What do y'all think?
I think people are tired of it. I think you're right. There's no way they're going to get the same response this time that they got last time. People are sick of it. They're over it. They're tired of hearing about it. And you see the COVID death counters on all the news stations again, but I don't see it having the same effect.
Well, there's an election year coming up. 2022 is an election year. It's like they're right on time. It's so predictable. It's scary. Question for you, David. Something I thought of the other day, actually for a previous show, and I was going to talk to Shannon about this, but she couldn't make it. Resistance committees. We need to organize businesses, or businesses need to organize themselves and take a no mask pledge, or put a sign in their window, like happened with the folks in California that said only non-vaccinated people can come in. You know, it was a joke. I mean, obviously they weren't enforcing it, but it's just the idea that they post a sign caused all kinds of problems for them. And of course the rest of the country is like, yes, but the leftists went crazy. So if you could have put out, you know, courtesy of Santa Rosa Volunteers, a sign, get like, you know, I don't know, 20 signs printed up, talk to businesses around town, say, hey, would you post this in your window? You know, we can become a no vaccine prohibited zone. So you can't require them, you know, we should start doing that, or positive, or just say, be curious which businesses, or give them the option. Say, we're going to make a couple of signs up here. You know, do you want one in your window that says only non-vaccinated can come in, or no masks allowed, something like that? That might be kind of interesting, you know, just to make something visual and get the businesses supporting each other, or line up businesses that want to support other businesses if they try and close down, and they're going to form their own little autonomous zone and say, no, we're not closing down. Yeah, I don't think it will happen here, but we can still make a positive and saying we're not going to let it happen here. Anything like that might interest you?
That's actually
think about
a
it?
Very good idea. Good way to break that ice. If you go in talking about the sign, and then you can kind of move into a coalition of not shutting down, supporting each other.
Yeah.
That's a very good angle.
Yeah, BAL, Businesses Against Lockdowns. know, there's your group. Pianki, what do you think? Resistance committees.
On all the things we talked about this morning, everything from the audit to recall and the points that you're making out about the vaccine is dead on time.
Well, thank you. We try to be on the cutting edge. That's what Action Radio is all about. So, yeah, and then we have to do something about it. So what we're going to do, the next action for me is to work with Dr. Zelenko and Dr. Mikovits on protocols to help the vaccinated folks recover from their vaccines. And if you start talking about that, you know, in fact, the next time you see a person that is, oh, I've been vaccinated. Oh, really? Are you ready for your recovery? What do you mean recovery? Well, from the vaccine. You're going to blow people away. They're going to have no idea what you're talking about. But I think we can do that. I think we can actually sponsor. You know, language is everything. We've talked about that, too. If you change the language, and I talked about this with Dr. Mikovits yesterday, if we can change the language and start talking about vaccine recovery, you know, that's going to devastate all the propagandists, you know, but it has to be on a national scale. We need big coverage on this. But that would be a huge thing is vaccine recovery. You know, take your hydroxychloroquine to recover from the vaccine, which actually is the disease. I'm still blown away by that. This is so different than anything I've heard until yesterday, but that's what we do here. Wow. Anything else, gentlemen? I don't want to keep David too long, but unless you have more, David, I mean, feel free. And then I'm going to play our Santa Rosa Volunteers, our new production for this week, which is Anti-Federalist Number 3, which I'm kind of proud of. This one's a good one. And so a lot of concepts, a lot of amazing quotes, a lot of good stuff going on there. It looks like Pianki's left us, but he might join back. You know, he calls back frequently on the show. David, anything else we can talk about, or would you like to listen to this week's production?
That is all I have for this week. I'm going to get back to work right after we listen to the Anti-Federalist this week.
Let me pull it up right here. There it is. Okay. So it's about almost 9 minutes. So we'll be back in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, SRV1776.com. That's SRV1776.com. Anti-Federalist Paper Number 3. As has been the pattern, the Anti-Federalist Paper is a response and argument against the corresponding number Federalist Paper. This one is no exception, with a blistering attack on the elitism and false premises leading to the incorrect conclusions, which was so evident and prevalent in Federalist Paper Number 3, written by future Supreme Court Chief Justice John Jay. No one knows who wrote Anti-Federalist Number 3, as it was signed A. Farmer, which is the founder's equivalent of John Q. Public. This paper was published March 7th, 1788. The first question asked is the theme for the whole paper. No wasted time or fluff in this paper. Here's the question. Whether any form of national government is preferable for the Americans to a league or confederacy is a previous question we must first make up our minds upon. He talks like Yoda. That was the question for all of the Federalists and Anti-Federalists. Either a national government under a constitution or a league or confederacy under the possibly modified Articles of Confederation. Whereas Federalist Number 3 talked about the happiness of the people coming from being firmly united under a national government of those who know best for the people, in other words, government by force with another name, Anti-Federalist Number 3 makes a very interesting and unusual observation for a founding document. A. Farmer said, "I have either read or heard this truth, which the Americans should never forget, that the silence of historians is the surest record of the happiness of a people. The Swiss have been 400 years the envy of mankind, and there is yet scarcely any history of their nation. What is history but a disgusting and painful detail of the butcheries of conquerors and the woeful calamities of the conquered?" This is the first reference I've seen in our founding documents to Switzerland as a model for us. Those last two things, conquerors and the conquered, go right back to origins in elites over the people, a national government over a confederation of the states. In other words, top-down government versus sideways independent government. Attacking again the overt controlling themes of Federalist No. 3 comes this line. Where the people are free, there can be no great contrast or distinction among honest citizens in or out of office. In proportion as the people lose their freedom, every gradation of distinction between the governors and the governed obtains until the former become masters and the latter become slaves. Or, as we might say today, the greater and more levels of bureaucracy, the further removed and accountable to the people, the greater and closer the absolute rule over the people by the bureaucracy. And that is exactly where we headed today, where we are headed today, as we are ruled by, quote, big government health through the CDC, which I call the Center for Direct Control. A. Farmer also says that the people are not at present disposed for and are actually incapable of governments of simplicity and equal rights. I can no longer doubt. Well, that's interesting. Where is the faith in we the people to self-govern? This author, like the founders, realized that if left purely on their own, the people would vote for their own self-destruction through selfishness and voting themselves other people's stuff, property, and rights. That's why democracies never work, and the founders knew it. So there is no pure system of self-government because self-interest makes it impossible. Then A. Farmer answers his own question, how this happened, by saying, of the people. But whose fault is it? We make them bad by bad governments, and then abuse and despise them for being so. Our people are capable of being made anything that human nature was or is capable of if we would only have a little patience and give them good and wholesome institutions. But I see none such and very little prospect of such. So today we might say that the potential of the American people is unlimited, but that the people will never be able to live up to their potential under bad government, which is incapable of creating the good and wholesome institutions required for good government. I hate to quote a movie character, namely in First Night, where Sean Connery says, there are laws that enslave men, and there are laws that set them free. However, it's right on. Anti-Federalist No. 3 hates the authoritarianism of Federalist No. 3, and the arrogance that if only the right and good people are asked to serve, then everything will be okay. A. Farmer also recognizes that the people will happily give away their freedom until they find themselves slaves. So what are the laws and institutions that set men free? What good and wholesome institutions would be created for that purpose? A. Farmer doesn't have an answer to those questions, but he does know the answer is not the Constitution and the national top-down government proposed by the Federalists. So the question I think A. Farmer is asking is, how little government can we establish that will preserve the freedom, remain stable in size and scope, and not advance toward the usual enslavement? That question has still not been answered in all of human history. So let me conclude Anti-Federalist No. 3 with a warning left by A. Farmer. If the body of the people will not govern themselves, and govern themselves well, too, the consequence is unavoidable. A few will and must govern them. Then it is that government becomes truly a government by force only, where men relinquish part of their natural rights to secure the rest, instead of a nation of will and force to protect all their natural rights, which ought to be the foundation of every rightful social compact. I believe we can establish the government of freedom envisioned by the Anti-Federalists. That's why I created Action Radio. But I also believe that the current government of force will not willingly release their power and privilege. No government does. But no modern nation has ever had a movement of the people writing the laws they consent to be governed by to create the laws that set all people free. That is my quest with Action Radio and our citizen legislature. That is the grand experiment we have joined and the revolution which we have started. Let us look to our founding for brilliance and inspiration and move boldly forward with courage and boundless optimism to where we should have been if the social compact described by A. Farmer became a reality. The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The Anti-Federalist Papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv176.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. All right, with that, I'll make Pianki's line again, alive again, and it looks like David has left us from Santa Rosa Volunteers. Great visit. We don't rehearse these. We never know quite where we're going to go. But from Project Mockingbird to Hollywood to the school budget to everything else that we talked about to Pianki joining us partway through, that's what Action Radio is all about. I mean, I have a very open format for a reason that allows us to be incredibly spontaneous and not have people restricted to like a 30-second soundbite or a two-minute limit, because that's what some producer, program director, operator figures that, well, we've always done it that way, and audiences only have a 30-second attention span. We treat you like intelligent people here, because you are intelligent. That's the whole point of the show. All right, Pianki, welcome back. That's my founding moments for this week. But I have trouble with the quotes, because they don't speak like we do. So reading this, I'm
no, probably
but the emphasis is in the wrong place. This is he talks like Yoda. You're going to be freedom.
Well, that was,
it is.
Yeah, they talk like Whoopi. But, there wouldn't have been no Constitution if they didn't make an agreement on the Bill of Rights. And you were absolutely right. The Constitution, the framers then sort of had the we know better mindset back there and then as we see going on today.
Yeah,
and it would have been a top-down government, which is really not the best thing for the people. So the introduction of those Bill of Rights, which assures the people their ultimate protections from government, if they had not agreed upon them, it wouldn't have been a constitution. It would have been just some more fighting going on.
Well, as I understand it, though, the Bill of Rights came later. Bill of Rights came after the Constitution.
Yeah, it did.
By like 10
years.
You're
right, it did. They did. So they were taking a chance that people would live up to what they promised, really.
Yeah. It's interesting, too. I haven't done one on this yet because I want to study it some more, but I was reading the Articles of Confederation, which are really horrible. I mean, the biggest problem with the Articles of Confederation, not that their ideas were wrong, but they wrote them so badly, with such stupid language, nobody has a chance to actually, see what they did. So that's fascinating. But if you look through them, you can actually see the Bill of Rights, parts in the Articles of Confederation. And so I can understand why people are upset, when they say you don't have a Bill of Rights, because they actually deleted the Bill of Rights sections when they wrote the Constitution. And I don't think a lot of people know that. I didn't know that. This is why I'm finding it so fascinating to go through these things, because that's when I discovered it. What do you think?
Well, they had a couple plans there, several plans, New Jersey, Virginia, Hamilton had a plan, and they all had the ideas. They was able to work through them and come up with what we have today, which in itself is pretty damn good. Of course, if hindsight was 2020, if we could go back and whisper in somebody's ear on certain issues like the definition of marriage, when life becomes life, and so several others that we ponder with today, that's the only thing that I could see that's wrong with.
Yeah, it'd be interesting if we had like the Second Amendment, a well-regulated militia is necessary to the security of a free state, regardless of the advances in weapon technology. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. They didn't do that. You could say that we have a right to life, both pre-born and born, liberty and property. I mean, there's so many things, but they can't anticipate everything. We don't know what people are going to talk about 200 years from now. But the one thing I do know is that human nature is very stable. Technology changes every day. And so if you can adapt to the human nature and the condition of being human, of the selfishness that is inherent in all human beings, and put the minimum laws and minimum government necessary to keep the ability of people to live their own life, have their own rights, advance their own cause, you know, prosper for themselves without overburdening, you know, that line is very fine. We that'd be an interesting project for us to try and define the limits. You know, where is that line? Where is the line where you have enough order that people can prosper and have their property protected and their rights secured, but not into intrusiveness of government? That's going to be a fascinating project. Actually, we got a caller right now, new caller. So this is always a chance. We do have a producer starting soon, so you're all going to talk to our producer next week. But for now, we're just going to put this person on here, 631 area code, and see what happens. Welcome to Action Radio. Let's see, line. Your line is live now. Welcome to Action Radio. You got Bianca on the line. You got me. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. I love the show. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Bill, and I'm calling from New York.
Okay.
I'm a comedian, and I wanted to get your opinion what's going on today with cancel culture and whatnot.
Sure.
I'm a comedian. I want your take. I have a bone to pick with comics who like to use vulgar language, dirty words in their acts.
Okay, well, don't use it on my show or you're going to be gone. Just, I'll tell you right now, I don't want any bad language on my show or you will be banned for life. Just because I know you're new to the show. I'm not trying to pick on you. I'm just saying that you can talk about what people are saying, but I don't want to hear it. You know, it's just I don't deal with that kind of stuff. But anyway, yeah, just so go ahead. What do you do in your act, for example? What makes your act different than other folks?
Well, first of all, I am in total agreement with you. That's what I'm talking about. I have a bone to pick with people who use foul language. We don't need to use foul language to get our points across to do comedy. I made a good living on clean comedy.
Is that because you're conservative?
What's that?
Is that because you're conservative, you think?
That's
more an emphasis or what?
It could be. It's based on my values, the way I was raised, you know. You don't need all the F-bombs. And African Americans, unfortunately, the N words and, you know, the see you next Tuesday words, you know where that's going.
Okay.
And, you know, I've also was a writer. I was on a very popular sitcom. And in my day, you didn't talk about dirty things. If I had a routine about what it's like to go to the dentist, not how to, let's say masturbate at work and all that fiddle faddle, that's not where I went. You know what I'm saying?
You're really getting close to the line here. All right, let's bring it back to what we're talking about here. Let's talk about the major issues. We've got two that I usually deal with on Wednesdays. The election correction, in other words, like the audits in Arizona and the different places like that. And, of course, the vaccine travesty, the whole COVID nonsense, mask lockdowns and things like that. Are you making fun of those things? Or what are you working on?
I am not making fun. I'm telling you that ignorance. Can I speak, please?
Well, yeah.
Hello.
Like I say, until I get to know you, I'm always careful. So, you know, go ahead.
I'm saying that ignorant and filthy is what medians are doing today, and we don't need that. And I'm no prude. I used to do a bit of...
What do you want to do about
prude.
It?
You know, Rick.
Yeah, hold on, Bill. Yeah, I'm going to
tell you what I
want to
do about it.
Okay, well,
I'm
all
no
right,
prude.
Hold on, Bill. Let's get Pianki's take on this. We share here. Pianki, go ahead.
Well, one of the problems today, you don't have parental discretion.
Yeah.
We see that all over the place. If you don't have parental discretion, and also you don't have intelligence that's going on in the education of the children, then you have what you have. It was one time when verbiage, songs, and text material had parental discretion ratings on it.
Mm-hmm.
But now they don't have that. That's why come the F-bombs have become so normal at all levels of society today, whereas it should be just concentrated in one, adults and those who approve of it.
You know, it's interesting, too. I mean, you posted a very interesting video where Phil Donahue, who had racist, you know, Khalid, I've forgotten his name, with Louis Farrakhan, and he was using all the N-word and the F-word and, you know, all kinds of things that, you know, referring to homosexuals, that you can't say today, that I'm not going to say, for the simple reason that I don't court for no reason. I've got too many important things to do. I don't need to use that language to get my point across. Let's bring Bill back. And this is kind of an interesting topic. This is not one I expected. And so Bill, let's get back to you. And what do you think would be, you know, what do you want to do to improve our discourse? And I still want to find out what you talk, what kind of routine you have for comedy. That's going to be very, I want to know the subjects you do cover. So Bill, back to you.
Okay. Well, first of all, that person makes a great point, and I'm in full agreement. We don't need to use the F word and the N word and the C word to get our point across. We can be smart with our comedy. We can be clever with our comedy, and we can get our points across. And it's just not the language. You have people who go out there with the hat on backwards, their pants down to their butt, and who are they waiting for, Jesus to pull their pants up? Don't get me started with women with dresses with their tight pants and showing everything off. They're called privates for a reason.
Okay. You know what I guess saying? We're getting some of your routine now. This is kind of fun. Go ahead. Keep going.
Well, I'm getting back to comedy now that COVID is, the pandemic is weaning down, and my comedy's all clean, and I will show you an example, okay? Listen to this. The kids are using something called Tinder to get dates. I don't know anything about Tinder. But if it's undetectable in a cocktail, I'll take a case.
I think I missed that one. Sorry, Bill.
All right.
I'm not on Tinder.
Let me try another one. Let me try.
Okay, try another one.
What's
go
that?
Ahead. Did you get that one? Go ahead. Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. In my day, we didn't have Tinder. We had Drugger. Who needs Bumble when you got Benadryl?
Okay. All right. I see where you're going. I hate to be honest, Bill, but I'm not rolling on the floor laughing at this point. I would keep.
All right.
One more chance. This is your last chance. I'm not going to let you go.
Okay. One more chance. Okay. Here we
all
go.
Right. Okay. Here we go.
People are talking about Netflix and chill. Let's Netflix and chill. I say no thanks. I'd rather get chicks with pills. What's the old saying? Put her in Jello to make her mellow.
Yeah, I think you better work on this a little bit. But I'll tell you what, you know, I'm going to let you go, Bill, but thank you very much for calling. I would love to have a comic on the show. I think that would be fabulous to have a good conservative comedian who deals, you know, incisively. I mean, I've tried to write comedy myself. I'm not particularly good at it. If I say something funny on the show, it's pure accident. Like I say, hey, take a chance. You never know. But I'll note Bill's call in my record of calls. And yeah, I don't know. I'm sorry. I just didn't think it was funny. Bianchi, are you there?
You got a point there. I understand where he made the statement about the disgust, the way things have evolved into today. Even when I came up through the period of time when parental discretion was the thumb rule. But now, because of the way our societies have developed, whereas you don't have the functional family, at least what we call the functional family, the wife, the husband, and the children, well, then, you know, things will degrade. Some people call it an upgrade, but I call it a degradation into what we experience today. And you look at the problems that you're having with your in Florida with the school board, the problems that you're having with the city councils and so forth. It's because that people today, Greg, have degraded into a position where they don't not only know the civic responsibilities, but they're not being carried out. And therefore, you're starting to receive this top-down authority rather than the people setting the direction that they want their society and their morals to be.
Well, they still let their morals go, but that's a whole other question. Let me change. We're in the second hour, and I got to so totally different things. We got the election correction, and we got the not ready for Facebook censored vaccine report. So we'll get into those right now. Action Radio, dangerously cool. All right, so I've got a bunch of articles here in the newsroom, so let's go to the news and see what's happening. Okay, the first story off the wires comes to us from Gateway Pundit, and this is one of my favorite sources for both election correction and COVID stuff because they do such a fabulous job here. And so I'm going to get some of the election stuff and some of there's some amazing things happening in the news. And Bianca, just jump in anytime. Just feel free to leap right in. I got a bunch of stories. Let me see. 1, 2, 3. Four. I got about 6 election stories, and I think about 7. Vaccine stories. First one is he lied. Vindman reveals in memoir that he was the whistleblower in Trump sham impeachment after he testified under oath that he wasn't the whistleblower. See, we always thought it was Eric Chiarimella. Right? I remember that name was bandied around a bunch. Vindman was disgusting. He's Ukrainian. I think he worked for the Ukrainian government in some capacity. He was even offered the Secretary of State position with the Ukrainian government, which I wish he'd taken, because then we could have revoked his U.S. citizenship because he's a naturalized American. He wasn't born here. And so he has no guarantee of lifetime citizenship. But if he serves in the military of a foreign country or works for a foreign government, you can lose your American citizenship if you're naturalized. And not a lot of people know that. And I wish he'd done that so we'd get rid of his ass. But this guy is as corrupt as it comes. He's definitely a deep state operative, and he's been caught. It says here, November 2019, NSC leaker, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman, testified on day 3 of the Adam Schiff show trial. This is a ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, Devin Nunes, Republican of California, straight up asked Vindman if he discussed the July 25th Trump-Zelensky phone call with anyone outside of the White House. And Vindman testified he spoke to 2 people about Trump's call to Zelensky, George Kent, a State Department employee, and someone in the intelligence community about Trump's phone call. Vindman would not name that second person. House Intel Committee Chairman Adam Schiff, the worst person to ever serve in Congress, quickly interjected when Nunes began to drill down to find out which agency the second anonymous person worked for. Schiff said he wanted to, quote, protect the whistleblower and wouldn't let Vindman answer. So Schiff obviously knew this guy was the whistleblower. Vindman knew who's the whistleblower. I think Devin Nunes knew who was the whistleblower too. And yet we go through this entire sham. And this goes back to the whole deep state, thing of trying to get rid of Trump. And they had a fake Russian collusion story. They had a fake Mueller commission. They had 2 fake impeachments, which were basically popularity votes. And they had, the Ukraine investigation, which is what this one was. And all this is just such nonsense. We forget it now because Biden, who should be investigated for stealing the White House, has no such investigations from the gelding old party, the Republicans. Bianchi, back to you, my news commentator.
Well, when you start mentioning the Ukraine and we see the things that went down with the overthrow of Yanukovych, about several years ago, and the talks that was going around in Americans who may have been very close to that, you have to be kind of suspicious.
Yeah. Yeah, I just remember those hearings very well. And Vindman, I despised that State Department person who, recklessly disregarded what Trump directives were. Both of these folks who were in the Trump administration should have been fired long before they ever got to that hearing. That Trump's biggest mistake, and hopefully he'll be back this year, to finish out his term. And it'd only be like a year out of his 3 taken away. But the first thing he needs to do is literally fire like half the government. Going back to Clinton appointees, you need anybody that's been there more than 10 years should probably be gotten rid of. And that would include Bush people too. But he needs to go back and get, to, I don't know, where would you cut the age off at? 35? Anybody older than that should be gone. Start fresh. Start with the younger folks and bring in a bunch of patriots into government. I think that would be the best solution. Just fire everybody over 35. Get rid of them all. Go. Go do something else. Go get
productive. I'm going to tell you. When you look back on, ironically, during the time of the Ukraine, when it was in mm-hmm. the news, that's around the time when online media service done away with a comment section from readers.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Then you had, like I said, you had the overthrow, and it's kind of wondering who supported or supplied those that was doing the overthrowing of the government with what they needed to do.
Yeah.
Then it's kind of ironically that of all Trump's conversations, the conversations that he was having with the Ukraine was being closely monitored. Then, ironically, we have Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and their associations with the Ukraine. Now, these things run over a long period of time.
Yeah, see, that's very closely monitored.
It makes
you,
want to start putting pieces of the puzzle together, Greg.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, it's the Democrat projection crime theory that whatever they accused Trump of doing, they were doing in spades, and they were monitoring to make sure that, that Trump didn't find out what they were doing. You know, if you want to look at Russian collusion, Uranium One, you know, and who's to say that the 20% of our uranium that Russia now controls isn't ending up on Russian, North Korean, and Chinese missiles or Iranian? I mean, who knows? You know, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if our uranium is in Iran right now being processed to weapons grade simply because of the deal that Hillary Clinton struck and those other folks. All right. So that's kind of that's treason. You know, if you're supplying your enemy with radioactive material to put on missiles to kill us, that's treason. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm just saying that needs to be looked into. But the projection that, that Trump colluded with Russia immediately causes me to go to the Democrats and say, what are you doing? You know, the Mueller commission, the Ukraine situation. We know Hunter Biden and Joe Biden, you know, are up to their ass in illegal activities in Ukraine. So what do? Accuse Trump, who released the phone call to let people know what he actually said, but they go after him to cover up what they're doing in Ukraine. Okay, so you look at impeachment. Impeachment was to cover up the deep state. You know, January 6th was to cover up the election challenge, you know, and the real insurrection caused by the FBI operatives, BLM, and Antifa. So everything that the Democrats do, you look at the projection, you know, aspect of it, and you find out what they're really doing. But no one wants to do that because the Republicans are geldings, you know, and that's our problem. We have a Marxist party and a no party. And that's the country's not going to survive that. And that's why I think the next election to replace Republicans as well as Democrats is so critical. You got to replace the Marxists and you got to replace the geldings, you know, and that's what's really needed. And you have to do it with honest elections. Go ahead.
You know, you're on the issue of Iranian. You remember the talks around yellow cake that was one of the.
That's a type of uranium. I'm not as familiar, but if anybody wants to look it up and call us, that is a particular type of uranium. I think it's like a higher grade. Maybe it's more easily made into weapons grade. I'm not sure. Weapons grade is pure.
I know it was a conversation of peace almost a decade ago.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
You came up with the conversation of Uranium One.
Mm-hmm.
Where Russia would have access to mine uranium here in the United States. So all these things are very pertinent. The players, we need to keep attention on them. And also take a look at this. Let's do some audit of their bank accounts, of their tax returns.
Well, the number one person you need to audit immediately is Dr. Fascist. Dr. Fascist has over 1,000 patents. I think he's a billionaire. I think he squirreled away enough money in Swiss bank accounts, gold, offshore accounts, things like that, that somebody knows, somebody the IRS knows, because they audited, they at least, you know, somebody got his tax return. And I think if you look at his 1,000 patents, his royalties, his license fees, and all the things he makes, that makes his $400,000 salary look like lunch money. I think that man has been working the system. He's part of what I'm now calling the medical mafia. The government medical mafia, let's expand it a little bit. He is one of the most dangerous people that has ever lived, and he's every bit as cruel and disgusting as Joseph Mengele. He's just not doing the experiments himself, but he's allowing hundreds of thousands of people to die knowing that he has the cure. I don't know how much more disgusting you get as a human being than that. Genocidal, psychopathic, vaccine drug pusher, Dr. Fascist, otherwise known as Anthony Fauci. Does that pretty much make it plain where I stand, Fiaki? Then I got another story for you.
Well, these stories with this, with Dr. Fascist and these vaccines, and now the variant, then the next variant behind this, evidently somebody is going to become very wealthy.
Just remember that variants are marketing tools, just like the original COVID is a marketing tool. This is all about marketing. All roads lead to vaccines. I'm really happy that Dr. Peter McCullough is quoting me because I said it first. Pretty sure I've been saying this for months. Yeah, all roads lead to vaccines. And so when you look at it that way, when you look at the fact that they're creating narrow, focused messenger RNA gene therapies that actually create the variants, they're actually creating a future market. And the fact that the vaccines degrade so quickly from 90 to 80, to, if it ever gets to 90, but 80% to 50% in a couple of months, you know, then you need another one. Then you need a booster. I mean, what do you need for your natural immunity has boosters too. Vitamin D, vitamin C, you know, and if you want to do more protection, ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. So the idea, they never talk about the curious and they never talk about your own immune system. That's how I know this is a marketing scheme. Because if they're actually interested in your health, they say, here are your options. You can boost your immune system. If your immune system is compromised, you can do this. Here's the cure. Here's the treatment. You know, and then, of course, we have vaccines if you want to try prevention. You know, that's how they would do it and talk about it if they're actually interested in health. They're not interested in health. They're interested in money. And so what they want to do is sell the product. And what they do to sell the product is ban anything else but the product. That's how I know this is all marketing. That's how I knew from the start it was marketing. Because they never allowed for any other options. Anyway, let me give you another story here. Code Monkey V bombshell. Again, we return to Gateway Pundit. Dominion whistleblower. I love whistleblowers. The real ones, not Vindman and Charmella and all those other folks. Dominion whistleblower speaks out, releases admin password proving remote access video. So I'm not going to show you the video because this is radio. But what you can do is go to Gateway Pundit and look up the headline, Code Monkey V bombshell. So what he's saying is from Ron Watkins. Code Monkey V released several photocopies on Monday, released to him from an alleged Dominion Voting Systems employee. So there are good people in bad companies. You know, this is where Project Veritas needs to go. Hopefully they're working on a bunch of Dominion stories right now. But a Dominion Voting Systems employee, you can see it right here. It's right here on the story. It says the documents prove that Dominion has remote access to their equipment during the elections. Shall I repeat that? The documents prove that Dominion has remote access to their equipment during the elections, which means any election, any machine from Dominion is programmable and is invalid as far as the election goes. And they say this is a huge development, and they got some more stuff on that there. What do you think? Pretty cool, huh?
Well, I see where Arizona had ordered some more Dominion equipment.
Well, that's because they're stupid.
So we wonder who's getting commissions off of that.
Well, if they're auditing the old equipment, all they have to do is bring in new equipment that's incapable of being audited or changes something or has remote access another more secure way, an encrypted way. That's stupid. I would never allow Dominion voting machines. That in itself is evidence of vote fraud. In fact, something came up really interesting yesterday, and I've asked Jonathan Mosley about it. And hopefully he wrote some stuff down. I'll probably present it tomorrow. But there's this legal doctrine that says that if somebody accuses you of something and you go out of your way to hide all the evidence that you know is there, that's actually prima facie or whatever they call it. It's evidence of your guilt. In other words, if you're covering up things that someone else is asking for of evidence of your crime and you're purposely hiding it, that, you know, if the evidence is destroyed or something else like that, that is evidence of your guilt and that can be used in a court of law. So I'm thinking, why not have the Arizona audit folks, you know, when the Maricopa people are restricting access and refusing to comply with subpoenas, which is my next story, you know, can't there be a presumption of guilt that if they're hiding something that someone else is requesting and their public servants are required to hand this stuff over because the election laws require disclosure and they're still hiding it and, you know, refusing to comply with subpoenas, is that not evidence in itself? Apparently it is under this legal theory that they're guilty of vote fraud. What do you think? I'm excited.
Well, they're going to try to clean up their tracks, Greg, and if they're successful, mm-hmm. then it's very, very likely for the future when it comes down to elections.
Because
what they're doing is perfecting it. They've recognized the mistakes, the little errors, the detections, and they're going to cover them up and come out with something that's damn near perfect.
Yeah. Yeah, we got a test right now. This is a test for the geldings, the Republican Party geldings, to watch what goes on in California this fall, because it's going to be a mail-in vote fraud election. And if they ever wanted to expose, you know, mail-in vote fraud before the 2022 elections a year later, now's the time to do it. I'm telling Republicans right now, in fact, I'll probably mention this tomorrow night at the committee hearing, now is the time to be in California to watch everything that happens, to observe everything that happens, and report on it to the nation, all the vote fraud you discover in this issue, because that's what they're going to try and do. The state legislature is going to try and keep Gavin Newsom through a vote fraud election that they're going to manipulate this fall, and it's a perfect opportunity to watch this. I don't care if Gavin Newsom is the governor of California or not. I left. It's not going to affect me. But what it will affect is the midterm elections a year later. If you can catch them in fraud now, document it, get it to the nation, and have some kind of Republican Party, you know, appeal against Newsom if he actually wins this recall and stays, that'd be the time to do it. And that'll be a real test for the Geldings to see if they're serious about correcting election fraud. I don't think they are. I think they like the crow, except for the new people who are going to come in. The Marjorie Taylor Greens, the Lauren Boberts, you know, the what's his name, the gentleman in the wheelchair, Cawthorn. I've forgotten his first name. But folks like that, you know, and some of the older folks like Louie Gohmert and even around Matt Gaetz, who I haven't heard from for a bit. They, you know, the party needs to change from the old deep state to the new party. And I really think any Republican over 35 should be gone. Let's get rid of them too, except for a few, maybe over 40. You don't have to do it by age or do it by ideology. But they need to purge. If the Republican Party wants to emerge as a party, they need to purge. They need to purge out the deep state. What do you think? And then I'll get to the story. Arizona Senate requests AG investigate Maricopa County.
I think it's good.
Okay, good. You don't have to comment every time. Just maybe, you know, but I like to give you the option because once I get on a roll, you might not get a chance for another half hour. So I want to make sure I check in with you. Anybody else wants to call us too? 215-383-3832. And here we go. This is August 3rd. So this was yesterday. Arizona Senator requests state attorney general investigate Maricopa County Board for refusing to comply with audit of subpoenas. This is a national file written by Gabriel Keane, K-E-A-N-E, who says Arizona State Senator Sonny Borelli. He looks like this really tough old Italian. He's great. You know, he could be like, you know, alongside Marlon Brando in The Godfather. He's perfect for this. All right. Sonny Borelli. Yeah. Filed. You know, he's filed a 1487 request to State Attorney General Mark Brnovich, B-R-N-O-V-I-C-H. It sounds Russian, so maybe Brnovich will tell me how to pronounce his name. Anyway, he says asking for an investigation into the Maricopa County, that's Phoenix, Board of Supervisors, after the board refused to comply with a subpoena from the State Senate requiring them to turn over routers, network logs, and passwords used in the 2020 election. Well, isn't that interesting? They're not turning over the passwords to confirm what we already know, that the election machines are connected to the Internet and Dominion controls the vote. That, to me, is evidence of guilt if they're refusing to comply with a subpoena based on the legal doctrine that Louie Gohmert talked about yesterday. Interesting, huh?
Very interesting. You know, you've had a lot of pushback, and someone says something just very, very simple. If you're not guilty, why are you preventing the investigation?
Yeah. Now, the old expression, if you have nothing to hide, then you shouldn't worry about being investigated. That's not true because individuals, we have a right to privacy. We have a right to presumption of innocence. We have a right to due process. And the reason we have those rights, even if you do have something to hide, is to protect the honest people because you don't want a government with a blanket ability to go invade, search, you know, arrest, you know, without due process, without a warrant, without a judge, you know, signing off on what you want to do. And the question of whether you have anything to hide is not for you to answer. The question is, does the government have anything to prosecute? That's the real question. So I understand that. Now, when it comes to a government, you know, or a company or an entity that's not an individual, this is different. We're talking about our election. This affects everybody. You know, and in fact, every state that was corrupt affects every other state because if Michigan, Arizona, Wisconsin, the other states, Georgia, Pennsylvania, have a corrupt voting system, then because they're talking about federal office like you're talking about here, national office, that affects everybody. And that Texas lawsuit still needs to go through. All right, change of pace here. This is from USA Today, something I don't often quote because they don't say anything I want to quote. This is politics. Two additional D.C. officers who responded to the U.S. Capitol walk-in, not insurrection, die by suicide. Chelsea Cox and Matthew Brown, USA Today, published 4:30 p.m. August 2nd, 2 days ago, updated yesterday afternoon. Washington, two District of Columbia police officers who responded to the January 6th Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in, my words, at the U.S. Capitol have died by suicide this month. According to the Metropolitan Police Department, bringing the total number of officers who have taken their lives, you know, who've been there during January 6th, to four. Now, I don't know about you, Bianchi, but that's a lot of people to have died, you know, especially with the investigations going on, especially since I don't think these people were called, you know, to speak at the commission hearing that probably said something, know something, you know, it just, I mean, this is beyond coincidence. I mean, one was a problem. Two was a coincidence. Three was an organized effort. Four, you know, this isn't a conspiracy theory anymore, folks. This is a conspiracy. Four people die of suicide. Four officers. You know, this
sounds like Clinton formula.
Well, exactly. So who's killing the officers? You know, I talk about deep state. You know, Judy Mikovits talked about this yesterday. Mikovits, I'm sorry. Sorry, Judy. Dr. Judy Mikovits. Here we go. Said that she knows scientists who were killed, who were trying to get the word out that these pharmaceuticals are crap, that they're dangerous, and they've been killed. Hell, I might face that one day. You know, if we get really powerful here and I start writing legislation that affects the wrong entity, you know, someone out there is going to have to carry on because I didn't start this for nothing. But think about that.
Yeah,
if
the way to prevent that or make it harder is to spread it out all over the place. Rudy Giuliani had information. Well, he couldn't keep it in his face. The best thing to do is spread it out across the nation amongst about 10 people. That way they never would get to the bottom of all the information.
Yeah, I think my security is going to rest in my popularity. The more popular this show gets, the more secure I'm going to be. But even that's no guarantee. Look at Andrew Breitbart. You know, so that's, you know, I think about that, well, not all the time, but every once in a while it sort of occurs to me. It's like, you know what? We're going to challenge authority in a way that nobody ever has. Because not only are we an investigative show that knows no bounds, we're also proposing solutions. And the last thing the deep state and the powers that be want is to have regular people get the idea that they can write the laws that they are governed by and get those to the legislatures and get them into the process and then lobby them. You know, that's going to be, once they find out what we're really doing here, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Can't wait for my press on the left. This is going to be fascinating. This is no coincidence. All right. So let me get back to the story. MDP spokesperson Kristen Metzger told CNN, well, there's an authoritative source, the Creative News Network, as I call them, that Officer Gunther Hashida, an 18-year veteran on the force, was found dead at his residence Thursday. What did he die of? We don't know. Suicide. Well, how? See, they're not saying how. This is a big mystery, too. And I had another story that I put on our special investigations page. They report that it's a suicide, but they don't say how. People who commit suicide don't hide how they kill themselves because they don't care. They're already gone. So what does it matter to they don't care about how they're killing themselves. They want to make sure it works because, unfortunately, they're in that position. And we want to try and save these people, you know, at all costs, if at all possible. But think about that. If someone is dedicated to commit suicide and they do it, I think the last thing on their mind is people discovering how they did it. And yet that's missing from the story. That, to me, is an indicator this is no suicide. Because if there's no cause of death, you know, what's missing here? What do you think? All right, well, let me continue on here. Hashida was assigned to the emergency response team.
Sound like he owns something.
Yeah, well, I think so, too. Well, I'm hoping our special investigator, Karen, comes back and starts looking into this because she was dynamite. Hashida was assigned to the emergency response team within the Special Operations Division and was dispatched to the Capitol on January 6th, according to the statement. He joined the MDP in 2013. So he's an 18-year veteran. So let me see if he was, let's guess, 21 when he joined. So he'd be like 40, 39, 40, somewhere in there, depending on, that's not that old. And maybe he joined 10 years later. Maybe he's 50. He's still not that old. All right. So I'm curious, you know, only hours later, the MDP confirmed another suicide had taken place in mid-July. Officer Kyle D. Freitag, assigned to the 5th District, was found deceased on Saturday, July 10th, 2021. Well, that's a few weeks ago, and then we're hearing about it now. He had been with the department since November 2016, so he's a young guy. And it says Maketha Watson was the spokesperson on that. The department confirmed D. Freitag, 26 years old, had responded to the riots. Sorry, let me say that again, had responded to the Capitol Hill walk-in to challenge the Arizona and other states in the U.S. Capitol, and that the cause of death was suicide. That's not a cause of death. Suicide is what happened. That's not the cause of death. The cause of death is how they killed themselves. And this is the deaths of the third and fourth known suicides of police officers who fought back against a violent mob of Trump supporters walking through the Capitol. No, I'm sorry, those are my words. You know, supporters of former President Trump. So this is all prejudice like crazy. But think about that. The other officer, Howie Liebengood, 17-year veteran at Capitol Police, and Officer Jerry Smith, 12-year veteran. How come these are all guys? What's going on here?
Yeah, they continue to use those magical words, don't they, Greg? Trump supporters.
Trump supporters. Well, and they call it these words like riot and insurrection, which we know is not true. Did you ever see the video that someone sent me, and I posted on my page, and it's been circulating around? You know, they have pomp and circumstance. It's nice music. And they have the reporters walking through the Capitol, pointing at statues, taking pictures, doing selfies, and things like that. This is such a crock. But think about that. This is horrendous.
A lot of these trails will lead back to Pelosi. Watch and see.
Well, it'll be interesting because we know who killed Ashley Babbitt, Lieutenant Mike Burt. You know, we've got that right here. Judicial Watch has done it, which leads to our next story. This is Gateway Pundit. So I'll make sure I give all my sources so you folks can look this up. Jim Hoft, who's the editor, published August 3rd, yesterday, 8:35 p.m. Judicial Watch, D.C. Medical Examiner's officer requested cremation of Ashley Babbitt's remains 2 days after murder. Email sent to D.C. government was returned in Chinese characters. Now, why would you cremate a murder victim 2 days later unless you were trying to hide the evidence? Just a thought.
Yeah,
huh?
You burn up all the evidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like Waco. After they burned the bodies, after they burned everybody and killed them, in Waco, they bulldozed the place into the ground. Oh, to promote healing, they said. Healing of who? I mean, that literally was a cover-up. I mean, they covered them up with the ground. So you want to talk about a cover-up? That was a cover-up. Oh, God.
Yeah, you're right.
So you think we should pass that on to our Bill, you know, our comedian who tried to be funny before that didn't make it? Hey, Bill, if you're listening still,
well, you can make
use that one.
Caterpillar commercial.
Oh, we could. Yeah, we're not going to do that. So anyway, let me get back to the story because this is really interesting. And then we'll take a break, and then I'll go to the vaccine stories. I got a whole bunch of them. I've got this one. I got one more to do after this. So we're doing pretty well. We're getting through our election correction report. Okay, Gateway Pundit. U.S. veteran Ashley Babbitt and her cold-blooded killer, Lieutenant Mike Byrd, in July, the Gateway Pundit confirmed that Capitol Hill Police, Lieutenant Mike Byrd. Let's say it a few more times. Lieutenant Mike Byrd. Get that into your system, people, okay? So that you can say it when someone asks you, who killed Ashley Babbitt? Lieutenant Mike Byrd was Ashley Babbitt's shooter. Lieutenant Byrd killed Ashley Babbitt in cold blood January 6th in the U.S. Capitol. Democrats, Pelosi, the deep state, dirtbag FBI Director Chris Wray, and the mainstream fake news media have all been protecting Lieutenant Mike Byrd. They are all protecting a cold-blooded killer and see nothing wrong with it. And this is who they are. And it says on Tuesday, Judicial Watch announced that it received, sorry, I hit my microphone, that it received 1,160 pages of documents related to Ashley Babbitt's murder in Washington, D.C. Get that? Tuesday, Judicial Watch received 1,160 pages of documents related to Ashley Babbitt's murder. However, her body's already cremated. Where's the family? How come the family didn't, the body wasn't released to the family so they could properly bury her? Was there an autopsy done? Does anybody know if an autopsy was done? Does anybody know where the ashes are? Does anybody know anything about this? Or are they literally, did they kill her, murder her, you know, cremated her so that nothing could be found? I mean, that's the purpose of cremation. That's the only reason you cremate a body that's involved in any kind of investigation is to hide the evidence, right? Is there another reason, Bianchi? I don't think.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of Bin Laden. Where's the body?
That's a really good question. Has anybody actually seen the body? Or was, well, remember when Rush... people don't talk about Rush Limbaugh anymore. It's really interesting. And, you know, 30-year career, and he's all of a sudden out of the memory. Rush did a series of shows he talked about Osama bin Laden. You know, the body was supposed to be buried at sea, but no one ever saw it. He thinks he was killed years earlier. And I forgot where it was, but there was some blowout in a cave where they completely used really high explosive something where they killed everybody in this cave. And, you know, apparently Osama bin Laden was supposed to be there at that time. So I don't know what happened. You know, but it wouldn't surprise me if Obama... go ahead.
The one lady that was running for prime minister in India, she said he had been killed earlier.
Yeah, I
remember
that.
And you really listened to it, I think he'd been killed 7 times at least from my counting. I may be wrong. Before the last time. So, what was her name? Bitter Bozo or something like that?
I don't remember.
And she was assassinated. Yeah.
I do not remember. Yeah, but I know what you're talking about. But yeah, exactly. So that's a great question. So that's very, very strange. So we don't know quite what's happening with that. I've got another article that's way too long to read now. I'm going to save it for later. It's on my Facebook page. And let me see if I can play. I want to take a break here before we get to the next little thing that we can do. Oh, I know I can do. Let me have what I haven't done today, actually this week, play a couple of our promotional announcements so you know what we do here. And I'll be right back in a couple of minutes. This is Greg Penglis. So what is Action Radio? It is a radio show with its own citizen legislature. That's you, the listener. It is a fully interactive system of listeners, expert guests, social media, writing bills, legislator input, bill submission, lobbying, and citizen action. Action Radio is the future of talk radio, using all the available technology in one completely integrated new system. You are listening to Action Radio Online with Greg Penglis. The webpage for all Action Radio shows and podcasts is blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Please share our show with all your friends and family, both nationally and internationally. The guiding principle of Action Radio is this: we the people give our consent to be governed through writing the laws by which we are governed. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. It's morning, and you are a proud black man. You go to the mirror. You are reminded of Governor Northrop of Virginia and Prime Minister Trudeau of Canada, both of whom appeared in blackface. And there you are. You just put on your shaving cream. And what do you see? Whiteface. It's bad enough that leftist aspiring dictators are choosing to go in blackface, but you, proud black man, have no choice but to appear in whiteface every morning you shave. Now, direct from Pianchi Laboratories, comes a great new product made especially for you, proud black man. Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream. Yes, Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream will give you your black face back during your morning shave. For Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream is the first ever black shaving cream. Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream comes in three shades: dark, darker, and darkest. So now, proud black man, you have a choice. You can stay in whiteface every morning, or you can join black men everywhere and choose Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream every morning. Okay, I have to make a confession. I didn't tell Pianchi I was going to play that. In fact, you know, for those of you that think, what the hell just happened? during the lockdowns last year, I got very creative, which is what I tend to do when I get angry and upset. And I came up with a bunch of very interesting pieces, one of which was inspired by Pianchi himself, which is why, you know, he's named in there as the creator of Pianchi's Picture Perfect Face Saving Shaving Cream, which took me about 30 minutes to learn how to say. And now it's stuck in my head, so I can do it anytime I want. I've played that for a while, Pianchi, but, you know, given the times, I think every once in a while it's kind of fun to throw that in. But just to let folks know, that's not a regular commercial of Action Radio. That's actually one of our political satires. Does that inspire you?
That is fascination.
What?
That assassination was in December of 2007. It was Benazir Bhutto who was running for her third term as Prime Minister of Pakistan.
Wasn't she? I think she was the wife of Ali Bhutto, who was Prime Minister, and then he was killed, then she took over, and then she was killed too?
Yeah, she was supposedly, it was a Taliban suicide bomber that killed her. He was only like, he was young, maybe like 16 or something like that. I don't know, 15-year-old.
Well, actually, you can convince 15-year-olds to do anything. I mean, the kids as young as 12 fought in the Civil War, you know. So this is why the military likes to have people in, you know, 16 or 17. I remember watching a show on the psychology of the military, you know, people that go in when they're 21 to 25, they'll do it and they'll serve and they'll be every bit as patriotic, but they won't love it. They won't love the war. They're not as ideologically impressionable. Whereas you get kids 15, 16, especially, you know, young males that are just kind of, you know, sort of approaching adulthood, they can love it. They can go in and they can wipe out whole villages and you know, they're psychologically much more malleable than guys who are just a little bit older. So it's very interesting how that works. But yeah, I'm not surprised. And that's why the suicide bombers are younger too, because ideologically, hey, they don't care. They're going, you know, straight to heaven with their 75 virgins or whatever. Imagine the shock when it doesn't work out that way. Anyway, so why was she killed? Do you remember?
Okay. Well, if it was a Taliban suicide bomber,
yeah.
Now you're starting to bring the interests of the West and the East into it. So Pakistan development of the atomic bomb. So, you know, it just goes, who's selling the uranium? It just goes back and forth, Greg.
Yeah. Who the hell gave the technology to Pakistan for the bomb? I'm surprised India got it, too, for that reason. You know, of course, Pakistan had to get it because India had it. You know, if anybody's going to, they're going to nuke each other, if anybody. India's going to play a really key role in what's going on with China, because the Quad, allegedly United States, Australia, India, and Japan, you know, to control China and the South China Sea. It's going to be very interesting to see what happens, considering we're not playing anymore. And all of a sudden, if you heard Peter Price report on Monday that China is almost declared war on Japan without actually firing a shot yet. But they're saying, hey, if you get in the way of our domestic affairs, in other words, Taiwan, that I just heard from a friend on Taiwan, too. So I want to get back in touch with her and see if we can get a report and how the folks are feeling there. That'd be very interesting. All right, let's get back to vaccine stuff. We've got about 20 minutes left. I wanted to do more election just because we've covered this topic. I'm always afraid we're going to beat the vaccine thing to death, but considering it's so much in the news and the restrictions are constantly coming and there's so many lies out there, we almost have to correct them. So this is from The Defender. This is a source that I cannot post on Facebook, but I'm going to get a Getter, G-E-T-T-R account right after the show. I'm going to start posting over there and I'll pin a post to my page directing you over there so that you can get the articles that I can't post on Facebook. I'm going to put them over there and save Facebook for, you know, cat videos, pictures of airplanes, you know, comedy, things like that, except for Bill, because Bill's not funny. All right. The Defender, Megan Redshaw. This was August 2nd, so Tuesday. No, it was the 3rd, Monday. Vaccinated people may play key role in aiding evolution of more dangerous COVID variants, study says. That's what we just talked about earlier and what we talked about yesterday with Dr. Mikovits. She says, according to research published last week in Scientific Reports, vaccinated people may play a key role in helping SARS-CoV-2 variants evolve into those that evade existing COVID vaccines. Exactly what we said. The researchers concluded three specific risk factors that favor the emergence and establishment of a vaccine-resistant strain. Not your own immunity, vaccine-resistant is a big difference. Your own immunity is something totally different. That's why you should always go with your own immunity. She says they are a high probability of initial emergence of the resistant strain, high number of infected individuals, and low rate of vaccination. Okay. However, the analysis also showed the highest risk factor for establishing a resistant strain occurs when a large fraction of the population has already been vaccinated, but the transmission is not controlled. I'm not sure exactly what that is. Let's keep going. Virologists, which Dr. Fascist is not a virologist, by the way, he's just a regular MD. Virologists have a name for variations of a virus that slip past vaccine or illness-induced immune defenses. They're called escape mutants. Well, that's new. Quote here, when most people are vaccinated, the vaccine-resistant strain has an advantage over the original strain. And that's Simon Rella of the Institute of Science and Technology in Austria. And that is actually from CNN. Interesting. Quote goes on, this means the vaccine-resistant strain spreads through the population faster at a time when most people are vaccinated. And that's Rella once again, who worked on the study. The data is consistent with a study released last week by the Centers for Disease Control, or as I call them, the Center for Direct Control and Prevention, which showed vaccinated people may transmit the Delta variant, now responsible for 80% of COVID cases in the U.S., just as easily as the unvaccinated. Well, I'm not sure about that. Anyway, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., whose group, Children's Health Defense, you know, sponsors the defender. Health officials warn the Delta variant can, quote, spread quickly and spike a new pandemic, but so far statistics don't justify another round of lockdowns or widespread vaccination of children. So there you go. All you folks are vaccinated. Just be safe and secure in the knowledge that you're the problem. Not only are you being vaccinated, not only are you getting the disease injected into your system and all the spike proteins and blood clots and all the other hassles, you're actually spreading the variants by making it easier for the virus to mutate more quickly, because your vaccine is very narrowly focused, as I talked about earlier, and the variants can get around that. So vaccines create variants, but natural immune system stops variants because it recognizes them more quickly. Interesting, huh? It's because we're from Pianchi here before I go into my last article, which is going to take the balance of the show. Got a comment, Pianchi?
Yeah, I was just thinking about what you were saying, Greg. You know, just visualizing what you're saying. I'm just waiting till the next call for another round of vaccination to come along. Then it has to be suspicious then, because it never will end. When will it end, these vaccinations?
It'll end when we arrest Dr. Fascist, most of the FDA, NIH, CDC. We put them on trial. And Judy Mikovits yesterday actually called for execution for crimes against humanity. That's what they're talking about. Now, I don't know if I want to go that far. I just assume see them rot in jail and make them suffer, you know, for the rest of their lives for killing all the people they killed. But this is a genocide. You know, if and I'm not sure how many people, because we know how many people died from COVID. And we and the other statistic, the big one, the 600,000, is how many died with COVID. But you think about that. People consciously knew the cure. They knew Fauci knew back in 2005. He knew that hydroxychloroquine cured coronaviruses in general back in 1986. I think I've got that pretty well documented. So this has all been known. So what kind of a person releases a pandemic in flu shots and alleged COVID shots to spread a disease simply so they can make billions of dollars for their friends in Big Pharma, for themselves, for the universities, for everybody else, using taxpayer money. You know, taxpayer money, all the research and development, we pay for all that. They make all the profits, and they scare the hell out of people into lockdowns and mask mandates, and they withhold the treatments, the preventions, and the cures simply so they can make money. These are sick people. They deserve to be on trial. And like I say, make of it's called the execution. I'm not. I don't know. We'll see. The Nuremberg Code, if you read the Nuremberg Code, what they did, the remedy for what they did is execution by the Nuremberg Code, which is the 1947 Nazi war crimes trial. Okay. Again, I'm not saying that far yet. I want to get the trial going first. I want to see what but these people have to be put on trial for their crimes against the United States, crimes against the world, crimes against humanity, basically war crimes. If this was a war that they did this, they'd be on trial for war crimes. That's how serious this is. I don't think people really grasp that, and that's why I wanted to emphasize that point.
Well, we need to identify the other players, too. We got him as a centerpiece. Who's the other players? He can't be operating alone.
Well, look at this one. Where's my – did I put it in this one? I guess I didn't put it in. Did you hear about the director of Pfizer didn't get the vaccine, and so he couldn't go to Israel? I got that on my Facebook page. That's out there. Well, that story. This is hysterical. I think I missed that one this morning in my zeal to get all my stories out there. Oh, I got a couple of cute videos, too, of movies. You folks that aren't my friends, you can't see this, but that's okay. Let me get the story out here. Where is it? Let me scroll down a little bit further. There's so many stories I didn't cover. Oh, gee, that's scary. Where is it? Oh, I want to do a D.C. rally next January 6th. I think we should all go. Well, we'll talk about that, too. Here we go. Pfizer CEO, Israel visit canceled because he's not fully vaccinated. Think about that. This is in J-Post, Jerusalem Post. So Jerusalem, you never read the U.S. news because they can't tell you about this, but the Jerusalem Post reported that the head of Pfizer couldn't go to Israel. The head of Pfizer, one more time, Pfizer, that's making you take the vaccine, the chief. And the reason he gave was he didn't want to cut in line. When did the chief of any corporation in this country ever wait in line for anything? You know, this guy was one of the most powerful corporate leaders in the country, and he didn't take his own product? What does that tell you?
Makes you suspicious, doesn't it?
Well, it's more than suspicious. I think they should be required to take their own product. What about that? Is it they're forcing this on everybody else? You know, I want to see it. I want to see them, you know, the needle into a bottle. You know, but who's to say they're not taking a fake one? But just the fact now, which other CEOs of pharmaceuticals are not taking their own products? You know, if it's good enough for everybody else, why isn't it good enough for them? You know, cut in line my ass. I mean, what would it take to get a vial of the vaccine up to the CEO of Pfizer, of his own Pfizer vaccination? Nothing. He's a liar and a hypocrite and a war criminal. Let's put him on trial, too. All right, here's an article I found very interesting. It's going to take selectively bounce around a bit here. Rodef Shalom, 613 is the website. I don't know what that means. RodefShalom, 613. So if you want to find it, that's where you're going to find it. The headline, FDA admits COVID-19 vaccine worse than illness. Let me try that again. FDA admits COVID-19 vaccine worse than illness. Again, this is something I can't post on Facebook. First subdivision here, a serious risk of coronavirus vaccines. A potential fatal risk of coronavirus vaccines has been known for decades. It's called antibody-dependent enhancement, ADE. Talked about it yesterday, talked about it several times before. In simple terms, because of the way some viral antibodies work, they may actually backfire on the person when they subsequently encounter the wild virus. Okay? Non-neutralizing antibodies may enable the virus to enter the cells, or the immune response may be skewed in other ways. This is what happened with the animal trials. Remember what animal trials they did on SARS-CoV-1? Before they modified it into SARS-CoV-2, they gave animals SARS-CoV-1. Well, the vaccine was fine. They took the vaccine. The animals were okay. But as soon as they got outside, they all died. They died from the wild viruses because of this, you know, antibody-dependent enhancement. This is why they didn't do animal trials this time, because they didn't want them all dropping dead as soon as they got outside the yard. Fascinating. Next paragraph. This is the reason why there has never been a coronavirus vaccine before. When they tried developing coronavirus vaccines in the past, this is just what I was talking about, the test animals seemed to develop robust antibodies. But when they were challenged with the wild virus, they got sick and died. This stopped the vaccine development in its tracks. This adverse reaction has been also seen with dengue fever, the dengue virus, probably that'd be dengue fever, Ebola virus, HIV, and RSV vaccines as well. Oh, Judy Mikovits confirmed that HIV virus is in the flu shots as well as the COVID shots. They've sort of connected all this stuff in. You don't know that, but that's what's in there. You know, listen to the show yesterday. All right? Anyway, the article goes on. The clinical trials for the COVID-19 vaccines were much too short to do proper and complete animal testing. Of course, that's why they did it during an emergency use authorization under a declaration of emergency, because they knew they could never get the vaccine the old-fashioned way. And by the time they did, this thing would have been gone anyway. It is gone. And the variants were created by the vaccine, folks. Okay, the original COVID virus, from the CDC's own figures, died out basically July 4th last year. I've got the screenshots. All right. And to emergency use authorization, not approval, of the vaccine means that the global population will be used as test animals in this experiment. Hear that, folks? You guys are the test animals. Judy said it yesterday. We've been saying it all along. If you get the vaccine, you're the test. You're the animal trial. The article says the FDA, referring to it euphemistically as vaccine-enhanced disease, stated as much in their briefing document, where they acknowledged that ADE, now that's antibody-dependent, let me look it up again here, antibody-dependent enhancement, will more likely be seen over time following authorization or even after licensure as vaccine immunity begins to wane. Since ADE could potentially take months to years to occur in the various populations and demographics around the world, we may have a looming global disaster yet to come. One microbiologist has referred to it as a ticking time bomb. Not only is this risk being ignored, but so too is halacha, and that's Jewish law. So this is out of Israel. All right. Going on, we've got about 6 minutes. See how much I can cover. FDA did not approve any vaccine for COVID-19. There you go. None of these are approved. They're authorized, but they're not approved. Okay, big difference. When the FDA issued an emergency use authorization, EUA, for the Pfizer vaccine, oh, there he is again, the guy that won't take it. You know, all other FDA-authorized COVID vaccines being rolled out now will only be EUA. They specifically noted in their briefing document, albeit at the very end, that the potential for this was yet to be seen. This is available data from the FDA. Here we go. Available data do not indicate a risk of vaccine-enhanced disease. This is from the FDA, okay? And conversely suggest effectiveness against severe disease within the available follow-up period. However, risk of vaccine-enhanced disease over time potentially associated with waning immunity remains unknown and needs to be evaluated further in ongoing clinical trials and in observational studies that could be conducted following authorization and or licensure. So even if they authorize this, they still want to test it. Okay. Today we've got a bunch of things here. I wanted to get the ticking time bomb part. I've got a caller here. We've got 5 minutes left. Again, now this is from a number that doesn't show up on my board. So again, you know, next week you're going to talk to the producer. I'll take a chance on you now, but if you screw up, I'm going to get you off the air immediately. All right, new caller. Welcome to Action Radio. What you got?
Hey, how are you? I promise I won't screw up.
Okay, good. Well, I got my numbers blocked. So normally I won't take a blocked number, but I'm taking a chance on you. So what's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Oh, it is? It must be in my settings. I'm calling from a 212 number in New York City, but it must be in my iPhone settings to have it blocked.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Unblock it for next time when you call. What's your first name?
Bill.
Another Bill. We got two Bills from New York. Yeah. This is kind of a coincidence. All right. You got a couple of minutes. What you got?
Have you heard of methaqualone?
No.
Well, that's another thing that I've heard the government's kind of messing with. It's actually Quaaludes, and I've heard they're, you know, putting those out there kind of a...
Bill, you're the same guy that called earlier, right?
No, but I did hear that guy. That's why I was calling in, too. You're not on that topic anymore?
Not even close. You got to listen to the show. Let me put you on hold. Listen to the rest of the show. Call back tomorrow. And after you unblock your phone, it'll be the best thing to do. All right. I want to get to this story because this is absolutely critical. So we got, like I said, about 4 minutes left. So the last part of the story here, is the vaccine a ticking time bomb? Biochemist and molecular biologist Dr. Doug Corrigan believes it is. He says he explains that antibody-dependent enhancement may not be seen for many years down the road. This is the big risk. This is the thing they're not talking about, is those of you who are vaccinated now and are getting over the initial effects, the worst, I hate to say this, is yet to come. He says, this is Doug Corrigan, this inherent unpredictability problem is highlighted in the following scenario. A coronavirus vaccine may not be dangerous initially if the initial testing looks positive. Mass vaccination efforts would presumably be administered to a large portion of the population. Well, they already have. In the first year or two, it may appear that there is no real safety issue. And over time, a greater percentage of the world population will be vaccinated due to this perceived safety. During this interim period, the virus is busy mutating. Eventually, the antibodies that vaccinated individuals have floating around in their bloodstream are now rendered non-neutralizing because they fail to bind to the virus with the same affinity due to the structural change resulting from the mutation. He goes on, in a real infection, our immune system is exposed to every nook and cranny of the entire virus, and as such, our immune system develops a panacea of antibodies that recognize different portions of the virus and therefore coat more of the virus and neutralize it. In addition, our immune system develops T-cell responses to hundreds of different peptide epitopes, this is getting technical, across the virus, whereas the vaccine, the plethora of these T-cell responses are absent. Researchers are already aware that the T-cell response plays a cooperative role in either the dependent of or absence of the ADE response. All right, this is not exactly the part I wanted to cover, but basically the point is that what's going to happen is it's important to talk about ADE. This is Gregory Glenn, President of Research and Development at Novavax. Novavax, which says launch this COVID-19 vaccine. He says, but we can't be overly cautious. People are dying, so we need to be aggressive. All right. Yeah. I read something yesterday. Maybe I missed the part that I wanted to get. Oh, here we go. This is from Pfizer. For a vaccine to work, our immune system needs to be stimulated to produce a neutralizing antibody, as opposed to a non-neutralizing antibody. A neutralizing antibody is one that can recognize and bind to some region of the virus, and that substantially results in the virus either not entering or replicating in your cells. A non-neutralizing antibody is one that can bind to the virus, but for some reason the antibody fails to neutralize the infectivity of the virus. In some viruses, if a person harbors a non-neutralizing antibody to the virus, a subsequent infection by the virus can cause that person to elicit a more severe reaction to the virus due to the presence of the non-neutralizing antibody. Does that make me... Pianchi, help me. This is getting a little too technical here. I mean, this is a great article. It says, but if antibody-dependent enhancement occurs in an individual, their response to the virus can be worse than the response if they had never developed an antibody in the first place. Basically, what they're saying is
maybe
the virus is causing problems.
Again tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll look at this again. We only have it's hard to do this justification here, but there's a lot. I got to read this article again. Hopefully, I haven't. This is more than. Yeah, there's a lot to this. I read it before, but it's been a while. You know, I got 60 seconds left. Do I have one other part here that kind of sums it up?
Yeah, that's very interesting. Being what you've talked about thus far and bring that back, it will be more understandable.
Yeah. Let me take a look at it again. Sorry about that, folks. This is what happens on live radio. I got too much to cover, not enough time to do it. All right, let's kind of sum up where we are now. That and again, after the show, because so many people have been vaccinated, I'm looking into treatments for the vaccinated. And this, again, is brand new. Nobody's talking anything about this. I got two doctors I'm talking to, Dr. Zelenko and Dr. Mikovits, to see if we can do that. So we want to get some protocols out there. And I'm still trying to find out if the same protocols that help you prevent COVID actually prevent you from getting the secondhand effects of people who have the vaccination, and also to help the vaccinated get over the effects as well. So it seems like they're all tied together. We just have to get the protocols to help folks out. I'm exhausted. Thanks, Bianchi. Thanks for hanging with me. Thanks to my new callers. Work on it for next time, and listen more to the show first so you'll know what we do here. Greg Penglis for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. You can support us at Patreon at patreon.com/actionradio. And, of course, you can listen to us as you drive by simply putting our website in your phone, connecting that to the car audio, and away you go. Back tomorrow, 7 o'clock in the morning Central Time.